You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 264. And listeners, we have got a really interesting show for you today. It's one we've been thinking of doing for a while, and it is all about producing young horses and how you can give them the best possible start to their career. I have two excellent guests. I'm going to start by saying a very big hello to our very own Max Corcoran.
Hello, everybody.
Max, really looking forward to getting your take on this as well, because obviously, yes, their ridden education is important, but also making sure that they experience other things in life that they're going to then encounter when they start going out and about to shows and everything like that. And we also are delighted to welcome five-star international rider Lauren Nicholson.
Hi, everyone.
Lauren, you are well known for being an excellent producer of young horses. So we're really looking forward to getting your thoughts on this, because I know it's something you enjoy, and it's an important sort of setting the foundations, isn't it, really, for the rest of their career?
Yes, absolutely. It'll be a good episode too, because obviously most of my education with young horses came while I was working for the O'Connors and Max, basically, so it should tie in well.
I mean, between the two of you, we have got a lot of experience that we are going to hopefully impart onto some of our listeners. Lauren, I'll start with you. Let's go back to the sort of the very beginning. Let's go to the start producing a young horse. When you're looking for one, what do you look for? Is it breeding, temperament, conformation, all of the above, none of the above? What stands out for you?
For me, you know, breeding doesn't make or break a horse for me, but it can obviously be a selling point, you know, as far as, and especially with having ridden so many homebreds by either the same stallion or the same mares, you know, it's interesting what qualities you can find in riding siblings and everything. So I think it is, you know, it's certainly a relevant part of the process, but it's also not like a make or break it kind of part of it for me. You know, for me, the biggest quality I look for is that they're trainable. You know, like, I think it's easy for people to get oohed and awed by the young horse that canters down to the oxer and jumps over the standard. But, you know, for our sport, it actually, those ones can end up being too careful for what we do, you know, it obviously shows a good amount of quality, but I think one of the more important things is actually if they're kind of careful and aware of their body. Like, I'd rather see one that doesn't over jump, but if they come and hit the rail, they come back and change something. And then, you know, the biggest, most important thing for me, as far as conformation goes, like, you obviously want a well put together horse, but I think one of the non-negotiables in our sport is they have to have good feet. And, you know, I've had two horses that in my career could have been amazing, but actually their careers got ended short because of them not having good feet. So I think for what we do and running cross country on unlevel ground, they have to have good feet. So for me, that's what I look for when I go to try a young horse.
Okay, fair enough. Max, what's your biggest criteria? What do you look for?
Well, for me, looking after them, it's a little bit different, but I think they have to, you know, you sort of can look at their eye and see how intelligent they are, see how responsive they are to you, and willing to sort of work with you a little bit. Obviously, I totally agree with Lauren on the feet. That is a huge, huge part. Obviously, you know, the conformation, people have different things that they are really strict over versus things that they can let go. You know, and it's hard also too with a young horse, because they're growing. And so they're going to change a little bit as they're growing. And even when a young horse is at, you know, say it's a yearling, it may look very different as a two-year-old. It may straighten itself right out. So it's hard. I like to, one thing I do that's particular for me, I like to look at the way a neck comes off a horse's shoulders, how it's, when it's born, it's just the way they're built, and the horses, where they come off with their neck up on the top of their shoulders or top of their withers, usually, typically will have a nice, very good balance, a good a natural canter, which is very, very important for our sport for lots of reasons.
Okay, so good feet and a good neck. By yeah. how their neck comes off their body.
Shoulders.
Off yeah. their shoulders. Yeah. I was trying to think of the right
word to say that. It's like you look at it and like some horses, they, you know, their necks sort of come out and then some come up, and there's just a way you step back and look and you say, that's always going to be cantering around like a wheelbarrow. And the problem with that is that they're always going to be physically pushing down on themselves, and it's going to be hard for them to stay sound because naturally their body is always going to put more weight on their front end than their hind end.
From a confirmation standpoint, you know, like Max said, everybody's kind of got deal breakers, and you know, some people will spend hours comparing confirmation of five-star horses at the jogs and everything else. But you know, in my experience, and Max is also, you know, if you've my four five-star horses I have in the barn right now, they couldn't be of more opposite confirmation between Veronica, Vermiculus, Paramount Importance, and Landmark's Monte Carlo. You know, I think there's a lot, you know, you can obviously look at a horse and tell if it has a pretty severe conformational deficit with like a crooked leg or anything else. But I think, you know, the conformation has as much to do with how they, whether they're hard on themselves or not. And I think a lot of times you get more of a gut feeling for that by watching the way they go as much as how they're built. You know, you kind of look at a horse like Paramount Importance, and he's a very big horse standing, but the way he goes, he's very easy and light on himself. And I think, you know, for as many miles as our horses have to run in their lives, that's a very important aspect.
It's a real asset to them later on in their careers. Okay, so we've got our young horse. They've got pretty good conformation. They are good on their feet, a good neck for Max. Where do you start, Lauren? Where would be your starting point in terms of a young horse? How old are they when you like to really start their education, ridden work? Talk us through that sort of early process.
So for me, like with our homebreds or the ones we get, if we got them before they're broke or anything, you know, I would start backing them, doing work on the rope and everything else as three-year-olds. And typically, like, we kind of would spend a month with them, you know, just because our season quiets down at that time. So typically, like, the month of November, we pull in the three-year-olds, try to get them a little more civilized. We get them backed and stuff and do get them to where they're being ridden around and stuff. And then we actually chuck them back out. And then, so as far as like the process of backing them, you know, it depends on each one, how quick you can do it. Like I've had some, you'll get a saddle on them the first day and be riding them around. And I've had some, like Vermiculus took like a month to get to the point someone could get on it. So, but you know, when we, you know, do that process, it's, the timeline is different horse to horse, but it's very methodical. Like each horse, we go through the same steps. And once they get comfortable having someone on their back in a small pen, we will then take them out and about on the farm. But we start off with, we'll have an older horse with them and someone, a pony rope on them. And we don't put bridles on them in the beginning. And I can get to the reason for that later. But yeah, so we'll start out ponying them around the farm. And basically the person on the older horse with the rope is just a bit of an emergency break in case, you know.
There's somebody on the youngster as well at the same time.
Yes. And so you're just kind of acting as an emergency break. And then as they get used to being out and about, then you do it without a pony rope on them, but still have an older friend with them. And we also, at the same time, you know, we're fortunate enough to have cross country schooling access on the property. We right off the bat will walk them through the water, walk over a little ditch, walk up and down a little bank. Like we do that just right off the bat while we're ponying them, and it's just a normal day of their life, and then it's not a exciting thing. And yeah, we start them in a rope halter, and you know, a few reasons. You know, the language horses understand is the release of pressure. You know, pressure to them is what, you know, something makes them uncomfortable, whether it's your leg or you physically pushing on their face or whatever else. And then when they do the move you want, then you take that pressure away, and that's the reward. I mean, you can talk to them and say good boy, good girl as much as you want, but they don't really care. That's not what they instinctually understand. And so, you know, we start them with the rope halter, and we have a string around their neck, and that is kind of effective for us as our brakes. And so they learn to stop off that string on their neck. And then, you know, they learn to steer and everything else and move away from pressure. Then once they have that down, we put the bridle and bit on, but still use the string as a backup. And I think, you know, the interesting thing is all the horses we've started like that, all of them up, you know, even the 5-star ones go in snapple mouths, and they have much better mouths and everything else. And I think when you back them right off the bat with a bridle on, they don't understand how to yield to pressure yet. So you're pulling on the bit this way and that way, trying to get them to turn. And I think it actually kind of dulls their mouth down. So it's just kind of been interesting over the years. I kind of realize all the horses that we have started from the beginning, they all go in snaffle mouths, even cross country and everything.
That's fascinating. That's really interesting. Yeah. Have you always done it that way, or did you start out using a bridle first off?
I mean, I came to the O'Connors when I was 17, so I hadn't broken any horses
okay.
when I was younger. Probably not well. I may have tried to, but I don't.
But that's always been the way that you found yes. it's worked.
Yes.
That's amazing. Max, obviously, from your perspective, handling the younger horses on the ground, actually, their education can start fairly young in terms of good manners, which actually stands them in really good stead for the rest of their careers. What are the sort of the key points that you like to focus on from a younger age? Is it a similar sort of thing in terms of good manners teaching the pressure and the release of pressure to a degree?
Yes, absolutely. What we know, and what this whole process that Lauren's talking about, if it's done correctly and the horses are good, and sometimes, like she said, sometimes it takes a short amount of time and sometimes it takes a bit longer, but it all one leads to the other. Everything that happens on the ground can always a lot of time correlate to what happens when you're riding them. Like I remember years ago, I was lucky enough to work for Mike Plum for a year, and I had a horse that was really fidgeting on the cross ties, and he said, I need you to help me get this horse to stand still. I said, yep, okay. And he said, no, I'm serious. He said, if it won't still stand still at the cross ties, how's it going to stand still at X? And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And that was, you know, that really opened my eyes and my mind to thinking that the stuff that we do on the ground is just as important what they're doing and helps them, and vice versa. And so a lot of that groundwork that we were taught, the natural horsemanship stuff of, you know, making horses go in places where maybe they didn't want to go, the pressure line, you know, teaching them simple things like, you know, backing up, going forward, moving left, moving right, and yielding to the pressure, and then knowing when to take the pressure off. It also helps us when we have to catch a naughty horse in the paddock that doesn't want to be caught. Which actually, you know, you can be out there for hours and they're just making you look really silly, and you're there with a bucket of grain and it eats the one bite of grain and then runs away. But I mean, there's been a lot of hours I've stood out there with David sitting on a horse teaching me how to do that, and now it's nice because I've learned a bit, so it's a game for them, right? You make it into a game when you're trying to catch the horse, and it does work, and it always makes me laugh. Even, you know, it's been 8 years since I've worked for them, and even still, I go catch one and I'll text David, I'm like, caught another bad one, and I just laugh. It's actually kind of fun when you can do that. But all that stuff, it makes our lives so much easier on the ground. If they will walk into the wash rack in a strange place, they walk onto the trailer, it's all that sort of is all correlating when they're young. If you teach them how to do that when they're young, just down their life, it makes them so much easier to deal with the farrier, dentist, you know, all of that stuff. Just standing still in the cross ties. You know, if you're at a show, you know, they keep ground tying them, you know, just back up and stand there, and they'll just back up and they'll stand there. And they just sort of find, they learn to find comfort in that.
I think another interesting thing to point out is, you know, in the 15 years I've been here and the hundreds and hundreds of horses we've had in the program or come through the program, not once have we ever, we don't have a chain shank in the barn anywhere. No. Because they don't need it, because, you know, they, once they understand that language of yielding to pressure, you don't need that stuff. You know, you have a tool to communicate with them without it. And so, you know, we don't have a scene, even if they are, you know, you've got the big five-star horse at the show and they're getting all wild and everything else, we have a way to communicate with them. We don't need the chain shank to keep them under control or keep it safe. You know, they know how to respect the area and yielding from pressure. And I think, you know, that's a big thing. You see chain shanks and stuff misused so often.
Absolutely. You'd be very hard pressed to find one anywhere. Especially when I was there, there wasn't one, did not exist. And so the horses, the rope halters with the ropes on them, they're actually very handy because they're easy to bathe in and you can go hand grazing in them. And I keep one as a freelancer. I have one that it goes in my little bag that I've got with my braiding kit and my tail wrap and my other stuff. I have a rope halter that lives in there. Some horses get so upset by a chain that they overreact, and then that overreaction gets really big and then they get scared again. But the rope halter,
and it gets worse.
If they're naughty, they come up against it and release the pressure and the conversation's done, and they can feel the release of the pressure and they're happy.
Just explain the rope halter to anybody that isn't familiar with it. What is it, and how does the mechanism work, so to speak, Max?
It's basically a nylon halter, but it's a round rope, and everyone's probably seen it on. It's kind of a Western halter, if you will, and they have some have knots across the nose, and some have. But for the most part, because it is a bit, if they do pull against it, it is quite strong. And then when they do stop pulling against it, it you don't have to loosen the chain to have it to give it release. It just the pressure is released automatically, if that makes sense. And it usually fits like a regular normal halter and has a clip on the bottom. And you know, some, like I said, some have a little knot on the across the nose. That's a little bit tougher than the others, but. The horses seem to, you'll see most Western people with them, and you'll see a lot of other people with horses that are a little bit more difficult to be able to work with them with that. And those are the halters that Lauren is speaking of, that when she, when they're riding the horses around, they're in a halter, and in that rope halter where you can teach them how to steer and everything.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, then how old would they be, Lauren, in terms of moving from one of those and sort of leading off another horse into going into a bridle? Does it depend on the horse specifically, or do you like to have them going in a bridle by a certain time?
It depends on the horse, but it happens fairly quickly because, like, once they understand how to yield the pressure, then you've got the tool you need to start applying it with a bridle. And, you know, another mistake I see a lot of people make with young horses is they very quickly become obsessed with the horse needs to have its head down or round. And they teach them quite early on to be downhill and unbalanced, especially with a horse that's naturally built that way. I much rather the young horses have their heads and necks up and out. And then, you know, as they develop their balance and strength, which is quicker for some than others, then they start giving you vertical flexion and the roundness you're looking for. But a lot of times I see people make their job even harder because they try to force the horse's head in and on the bit as they think they're doing, but they're actually putting them out of balance and downhill. And then all of a sudden you've got a horse that's got this canter you can't control, and they get sold the mouth and everything else. And you know, we've all seen that horse that's cantering around with its nose on its chest and the rider can't slow them down or anything. So I think
I've probably ridden that horse.
Yes. I think people get very well. I think people confuse being round with being balanced. And I think it's actually the other way around. You have to teach them how to be balanced first, and then you can put them on the bit.
Okay. So what are your favorite exercises for teaching balance in a young horse?
For me, I find, I call it just doing a square. And, you know, for that, we've all ridden that young horse that doesn't have some magical super balanced canter right off the bat. But if you try to slow the canter down by pulling, you know, the way I explain it to my students is if you feel like you have to hold the canter, then you're it's out of balance, right? So what I use is I just do a square turn. I'm like, just imagine doing an actual square turn with them. Because if you just use your outside rein and are like, okay, turn now, and think of doing a 90-degree turn, that automatically makes them have to get onto their hind end. And I don't worry about what their head's doing. But if you make that turn like that, then it puts their hind end in a place that they can hold themselves up. And then they kind of have a light bulb moment. And then I canter straight ahead for a few tries until they start losing their balance again. And then I do that turn. And then I just keep doing that because the horses understand it and they don't feel like they're trapped. You know, you see a lot of times people try to teach them how to get uphill or collect in the canter, and, you know, they're pulling their heads in more and more and more, and the horse is just getting trapped feeling, and they rear or they nap or they whatever else. But I found that exercise works best to teach them how to hold themselves up in the canter and without them ever feeling like they're in a place they need to panic. And it's just an easy exercise that people can get, you know. Just make a 90-degree turn just using your outside rein. And then all of a sudden the horses are like, oh, I can put my hind leg there and then I can hold myself up. And I do it, you know, very early when they're super young. My kind of rule is if I have to hold you in the canter, hold you up in the canter, then, you know, you have to do this exercise. Anytime you feel like you're holding them together, and you're missing a step.
And that's your go-to. And actually, that kind of goes back, I think, to what you were saying earlier about being good with their feet. They're kind of learning early on that actually they have control of that and how they can manage it themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, in terms of introducing their jumping, and I know you've already said that they would be very early on looking at some of the more natural obstacles out in the cross-country mm-hmm. school area. What do you do about in terms of introducing coloured poles, and how would you introduce those to a younger horse, Lauren?
I start out with, I'll just have a little simple course of just rails on the ground. And I'll just start with that. And whether they follow someone or not, a lot of times they're still in the rope halter. And, you know, you'll just walk, trot, canter, do that, and just the poles on the ground. And I've actually found I'll do it quite early because I found it actually kind of makes them easier when you're trying to teach them steering and stuff, because it gives them, there's a point to them turning, you know, like I feel like in their brains, it must be kind of frustrating when we're trying to teach them to steer. If you're just in an empty arena and you're like, okay, now turn. And they're like, why? But if you give them, you know, okay, you're turning to get to this pole, like it just gives them a bit of a goal and an exercise. And then, you know, they kind of figure out the steering as it goes. And, you know, you keep it. I mean, we spend half the time dying laughing because it's uncoordinated and they're stumbling and they're spooking and they're going, you know, like it's just, but you just keep it casual, fun, entertaining. You know, if they want to stop and sniff it, that's totally fine. And then once they have learned to go, you know, from pole to pole and, you know, are kind of confident with that, then you just turn into a tiny cross rail and you just kind of gradually build it up that way. And we also, you know, when we're teaching them to jump and cross country and stuff, we'll do quite a bit just on the rope, not with someone on their back, because one thing I think is actually kind of essential, and it's the same with little kids and everything else, like they're gonna make mistakes and fall up a bank and trip over a log and everything else. And when you're on their back, instinctually, you don't want them to fall down. So you're going to kind of help them and protect them. And then they can kind of get dulled to paying attention of what to do with their own legs. Whereas if you have them on a rope and they make that mistake and it's not a big deal and it just kind of happens and then they come back and they learn from it. Whereas if they fall up a bank with a rider on, it turns into a bit of a big situation, right? Because you fall off, they run away, you know, then it's all of a sudden this really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And I think the kind of recurring theme is very much keep it fun, keep it stress-free, let them learn themselves here, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest mistakes I see with people make with the jumping and the cross country and stuff is people are very afraid to, you know, we've been taught that stopping's bad, right? Like they're very afraid to let the horses stop. And then they use speed or whipping or spurs or whatever make them jump it. Yeah. And so then the horses don't actually learn what they're doing. So to me, I don't care if they stop as young horses, but for me, it's always that they have to stay on the line of direction. Like you can stop and look at it and while they're in that learning phase, you just keep the jumps at a height that you're comfortable walking over, right? Something that you don't need speed to get over. And then, you know, like, and talking about, like, you see so often, say, the water jump, and someone can't get the horse in the water jump. So the horse is backing away, and they're kicking and whipping it. And then the horse starts to step forward, and they keep kicking and whipping it, right? Because they don't think they've gotten the answer they want until the horse is in the water. But from the horse's point of view, it's getting kicked and whipped, whether it goes towards the water or away from the water. So it doesn't understand how to make the pressure get released. So even if you know that as soon as they take a step forward and you take the pressure off, that they're going to stop or back up again, you have to establish with them that stepping forward is how they get that pressure released. And it may take a while, but it always is successful in the end. I've never seen it not work. And I think, you know, people forget that. And from a horse's point of view, like, why would they go in the water if you are kicking and whipping them no matter what, right?
Anyway,
so
it's
just about if they take a single step in the direction you want them to take, the pressure comes off. And then that's how they learn how to get the pressure released.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really valid point. And one that I think a lot of people will find very useful. When do you give your young horses breaks? I know you said you bring them in at the end of their sort of 3-year-old year if you've got them from a very young horse. But what sort of breaks do you like to give your young horses? There's some snorting going on. It's not mine.
I'm on a horse. It's me. I'm on a horse and they started welding something.
That's I'm okay. Great. I'm impressed with the multitasking. It's okay.
Like for us, you know, as soon as they're kind of like popping on to something, like I'm big into giving them breaks a lot, you know, like we'll give them, you know, we'll kind of work them consistently for a couple of weeks. And I won't ride them for a week or, you know, they just get a lot of breaks like that, just little ones. Because especially you don't need them to be fit. Like even if they're going novice or whatever, you don't need to be riding them every day to be fit. Like you're not going to lose any fitness by giving them a week out in the field. So, you know, and I think especially for the ones that are quite big and growing a lot, I think it's super important that you give them lots of breaks. Because I think it's for their brains and for their bodies, and it keeps them happy and it keeps them interested. You know, like we have 2 4-year-olds right now that are very different. One is very big gelding by 7Z, and then the other is a little sharp mare and took like 30 minutes to back. Like he was so easy, and he's just been really easy the whole process. Very sharp to back. She took quite a bit of time, and you know, Kimmy Cesari does the young horses with me, and you know, like it took us quite a while to get her back. So she stayed in kind of consistent work for a bit longer to get to a solid place. Plus she's little, so she's not growing a ton, so she's pretty comfortable with her body. whereas Simon was having huge growth spurts left and right. So he ended up getting quite a bit of time just kind of getting checked back out in the field to finish growing and stuff.
And do you give them weeks or do you give them months?
Both. You know, sometimes, okay, you know, we'll give them a week, or sometimes, you know, like Simon's already done several novices and like he's kind of ahead for his age. So we got up here, checked him out in the field for a month. You know, like I'll do both. And especially like, you know, if they've taken some like huge growth spurt, like he got up here to Virginia and had a massive growth spurt and was so uncoordinated and everything else, so we just check him in the field for the month. Or like when the footing, we've had quite a drought up here, so the footing's been very, very hard. So we kind of just gave them both a break for a few weeks and didn't do anything. Yeah. And obviously if you give them a month off and you take a little more time, you know, to make sure they're ready to go into an event or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think giving them time off is super important, little breaks.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think Simon is one of my favorite stable names ever. That's a brilliant name. Can I just ask, this possibly might sound a bit obvious, but what are your sort of classic signs of a horse going through a growth spurt? What would you look for and go, oh, actually, do you know what? I need to back off slightly now.
They usually kind of get like a little bit, just a bit pissy, but they also get very uncoordinated. Like all of a sudden, they'll go from being, you know, quite balanced or whatever else to stumbling around a lot and everything else. You know, I think it's just like when kids are growing up, you know, you get the, it hurts when you're growing, and you also are just, you're such a klutz at the same time. So, you know, what's the point at hammering away at them when, you know, they're sore and they can barely put one foot in front of the other anyway. And, you know, even if we do kind of keep going, we do a lot of just hacking out in the woods and like we call it bushwhacking. And, you know, it will just go through rough areas and trails and creeks and everything else. And just, you know, I think it's important to make them just kind of be horses, but, you know, to just teach them where their feet are and how not to fall in a hole. And, you know, I think it's important for eventers, like they have to be super aware about where their feet are and how to look at the ground and process the best way to get across it.
It's a good point, actually, because you can be inclined to wrap them up in cotton wool a little bit, but actually that's not doing them any favors for later in their career.
I think a lot of times, I think, you know, it's been great. I mean, it's been so fantastic for the sport that we have all this wonderful footing now and everything else. But I think people can sometimes make them a bit precious, and it's hard because you do want to protect them. But on the flip side of it, you know, you have to think about, okay, if I can't take this horse on a trail ride without it going lame, like it's never going to hold up a Bentayne, right? You know, that was a little bit one of the bigger things I learned in the time I spent living in England, is they're much more cut and dry. Like they don't protect them. And they obviously also have a much bigger depth of horses to choose from than we are. So that also inclines us to be, to make them a bit precious. But they also, they're like, if they're not going to hold up, they're not going to hold up. Like they don't try to make a horse hold up by protecting it all the time.
It's natural to be protective, and you want to be protective. You don't want to go off and do silly things, but also you do need to teach them how to look after themselves as well.
Exactly.
Max, you've got your young horse. They know all of their basic sort of good manners at home. They stand on the cross ties, all of those things. But they're going to start going out to events, or they are starting to go out to events. What sort of things can you do at home to make sure that when they go to an event, they actually take other things in their stride? Because obviously there's more to it, isn't there? There's the traveling, there's the standing by the box, there's the going to all the different tack changes, all of those things. What would you do at home to make sure that they're ready for that?
Send the working student with them. No.
the first
overnight, I mean, I know when we would travel the horses from Florida to Virginia, sort of one of the, you know, we always had a full day of everybody gets on the trail, everybody gets off the trail, everybody goes on a little trailer ride around the farm, just to make sure that we've checked all those boxes and they're gonna, you know, they understand what's happening and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's just, you know, typically if your homework has been done, all your ground manner stuff has been done, you should be, and it's solid, they should be quite good at the shows. And obviously, it's scary going to a new place, but it's and you know, other horses around and the loudspeakers and all that kind of stuff. But you know, a lot of times, like, there are some horses that will go out and just be like, oh, cool, we're at a show, and then others will probably melt down. But to give yourself enough time when you're going to go to that show for the first time or go off the property for the first time and not say, okay, well, my dressage test is at 10 o'clock, so I'll get there at 9. Now you want to get there at 8. And it's a lot better to have an extra hour to go get a cup of coffee than it is to try to rush to get that young horse tacked up and in the ring and fighting with it and stand still and I can't, you know, get over, you know, help me hold this horse. If you can spend that time, you know, pull them off the trailer. Are you okay? Yep, you're good. Okay, put you back on the trailer. Take the next one out. Are you okay? No, you're not okay. Okay, let me work with you. You know, just try to get them to be okay where they are. And just if you rush it, it's going to end up biting you in the butt down the road, because it just it doesn't help to hurry things along with young horses. And, you know, sometimes that horse might melt down. You put it back on the trailer. It takes a breath, you pull it back out again. You might be just doing that all day, and maybe that day they can't compete, they just don't. And that's it. You have to forfeit your entry fee, but that's their day, unfortunately. And so, you know, it's patience and timing. And that will, it just travels on to the next show and to the next show, and they do get better. And, you know, in their first overnight show, God forbid, there's a lot of screaming that goes on. But they figure it out, and they sort it out, and they have confidence in themselves to be okay in those situations. And so it's just sort of teaching them that, you know, life's okay. We're here, and we're not gonna make a big deal of it, and everything's calm, and we're gonna carry on. And that's a big deal too.
But also, if things aren't okay, it is all right to go, do you know what? We will put you back on the trailer and go home. Like, I think that's a really good point, because actually you can kind of think, you know, we're going to push through it. But actually hearing people like yourself and Lauren say, do you know what? That's all part of the learning experience.
Yeah.
And if we do need to say, do you know what? Today isn't our day. It's better not to have a bad experience and finish on a bad note. You can go away, absolutely, work hard, and come back.
Exactly. And maybe they just need to go to your friend's farm go to your next friend's farm the next day, and just sort of they keep having these little outings and like I said, just, it may take 20 minutes, it might take 2 hours, but to get to the point where they are taking a breath and they're having patience and feeling okay about themselves, and then it's done, and then you can carry on.
Yeah, I really like that piece of advice. Do you ever find with a young horse, Max, that the first time or the first couple of times you take them to a show, they're really well behaved, and then they start to know, actually, this is quite exciting, and they start to get a bit full of themselves? What would be your advice in that situation?
Again, go back to the basics, you know, go back to, and again, not rushing things. If they do start to get a bit goofy and up and stuff like that, to take the time. And again, it's like, if you can give them that extra bit of time, it'll save you so much more time in the future, if that makes sense. Well, one hour is going to save you 50.
Yes. Yep. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. I'm the classic person that would arrive about 10 hours early the day before, just so I wasn't late. So I really like that sort of thinking. Okay, let's go for your top tips. Three top tips that you both would say, do you know what? If you've got a young horse, think about this, because it will make such a difference to your relationship with them, into progressing their career and really lay good foundations. Lauren, I'll come to you first. What would be the three things that really sort of stand out for you that are so important?
I think in the beginning, making sure to treat them like horses. Because, you know, I think if you start protecting them, it's really hard to stop doing it later, you know. So if they're going to run around the field, let them do it, you know, because eventually they'll learn that running around the field doesn't get them anything. Whereas if you go grab them out of the field, then all of a sudden they, you know, and then just spirals. Then all of a sudden when they're an advanced horse and you're about to go to the Olympics and they run around the field and hurt themselves, you know, whereas if you taught them as a young horse to not be stupid it'll pay off in the long run. And then also, just the slower you go, the faster you get there. You know, some young horses are ready for young event horse championships at four-year-olds, and some horses aren't ready to trot a cross rail. You know, one good example of that, Max will probably laugh, would be Vermiculus. Like, he was I couldn't canter a fence until he was almost six, because he was so feral, but also had this massive, he's also very opposed to being trained, but he also had this huge canter that he couldn't control. So, you know, if I'd tried to canter courses as a four-year-old, it would just been disaster. Like, he trotted fences the majority of courses until he was six, which does bite me in the butt sometimes, because he's very confident trotting very large fences. Like, he trotted a couple of the fences at Burley in the big water, which is a little nerve-wracking. I still remember walking the course with Janelle, and she was like, you have to get the four out of the bank, out of the trout hatchery. And I was like, he's just going to trot. And she's like, he can't trot. And I was like, Janelle, I agree. I don't like it, but I can't make him not trot. But it worked for him. But, you know, there's no timeline on it. There's been super successful horses that were very good as four-year-olds, and some that were horrible as four-year-olds. So don't put a timeline on it. I guess my third thing. Yeah, like, just to get them out a lot, you know, like, and not with an agenda. Like, we do a lot of just, you know, if we're taking the older horses to show and there's an empty spot on the trailer, we'll chuck the 3 or 4 year old on, you know, just getting them out and about quite a bit when there's not a reason to, and there's no pressure or agenda to it. Because I think just the more they can travel and be with horses they're used to traveling, they'll be better and better at it as older horses. And, you know, we all have had bad travelers and good travelers, and it makes a world of difference when they're good about going out and about new places.
I think they're really good tips. The slower you go, the faster you get there, I think is brilliant. Yeah. That's really, really useful. Max, how about you? What are your top tips for a young horse?
One thing I will say is, if you aren't comfortable doing this work yourself, find someone to come and help you. I think
Absolutely.
That's a really big thing, because some people aren't. I mean, Lauren's been doing this for years now, and it's taken her a long time to be so good at it. But if you're not comfortable doing it, if you don't understand the groundwork part of it, find someone to help you. And again, like, if you're trying to load your young horse, I mean, people say, oh, my horse won't get on the trailer. So, well, have you ever called someone to help you do this? Well, no, is that something to do? I said, yeah, it saves you so much time. If you don't know how to do it yourself, get someone to come, and that, however much money it costs for someone to come and work with your horse for a day, it is worth every penny. And to teach you, and then to make sure they teach you how to do it as well.
And I'll still call David to help me with them. You know, you even, no matter how much you've done it, like, you still just always kind of need some help on the ground sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's no shame.
Yeah. Like Lauren said, another tip is like just the patience part of it is to be very, very, very patient. And the other thing too, if you've got a young horse that you don't, you know, as an amateur or someone that's coming up levels, if you have a horse that you just don't get along with, or you're scared of, or it's not going to work, there is no reason to keep it. You know, maybe it's time to sell it. Maybe it's something you want to get another horse, and just sort of be very honest with yourself. And, you know, if you're going to search for a young horse, make sure you get a professional that can come and help match you and that young horse together, and make sure it's an appropriate horse for you. You know, we hear the story of the, you know, the 14-year-old girl that goes and buys the 3-year-old off the racetrack, and it ends up, and, you know, there is some huge success stories, and that's the ones we hear, but we don't hear about the thousands of ones that don't go so well. And then, you know,
that would be
basically,
me.
So there, that sort of doesn't, you don't get to hear that story. So it's, you know, making sure that type of thing as well. And then, you know, just patience and practice and help. Yeah.
I think there is so much good advice there. And I really think I've certainly learned a lot listening to you both. I could sit and chat to you for hours. So thank you both. I really hope that there is, as I say, something in there for you listeners. And I hope you have learned something to take away from this show. Lauren, Max, thank you both so much. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks.
Listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the USEA official podcast. And don't forget, if you do listen in and you do subscribe, please subscribe, much appreciated. Then drop us a message when you're listening. Tag us across social media at US Eventing and let us know as well what you would like to hear about on future episodes of the show. We would love you to get in touch. For now, that is all we've got time for. But a huge thank you to Max and to Lauren, and we'll be back very soon with another episode. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.